I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. When Darrell Clark was sworn in as president of Philadelphia City Council earlier this year, he acknowledged his two predecessors. He said, if I can work as hard as John Street and treat people as fairly as Anna Verna, I'll have a solid foundation on which to lead City Council. Clark represents the city's 5th district, which includes parts of the thriving downtown along with poor neighborhoods, the campus around Temple University, and communities that are undergoing rapid development and redevelopment. Clark has been a prolific legislator in his years on Philadelphia City Council, but has rarely been one to seek out the spotlight. He joins us on Radio Times to talk about his vision and his plans for the city. And Darrell Clark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, and congratulations on your new job.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
What's been the biggest surprise in the last couple of weeks as City Council president?
Actually, the notoriety.
Sitting down for interviews as this?
Yeah, it was just this rush to know who Darrell Clark is as a person. And, you know, I guess my response was that I'm a guy that's been working in the city of Philadelphia and working in this building for the last 30 years. And I couldn't quite understand, you know, this notion that nobody knows me. But, you know, I guess when you get on this quote unquote big stage, there's a broader audience. So, you know, that's the one thing that really surprised me.
So are you more comfortable or reluctant? And as I said to you before we went on the air, this is not the psychiatrist couch, yeah. So we're not going to do that with you. But are you more comfortable with the spotlight?
Well, yeah, I am. But the reality is I've just, over the period of time and the people I've worked with and for, is this, I've developed this worth ethic thing. And I've been told that you have to go out to more functions, and I'd much rather be somewhere walking down a neighborhood talking to residents about the challenges that they face as opposed to going to a black tie gala. I mean, that's just who I am.
Yeah.
But I understand that there has to be some balance. I have to be more visible in certain social settings, so I'm figuring out a way to get there.
Have you been to a black tie gala recently?
I went to the auto show.
Oh, you did?
So I was okay with that because I love new cars. But that was pretty much the last one. Yeah.
But is it the small talk? I mean, just the things you have to do in those social settings?
Yeah, I guess so. The reality is when I, you know, personally, and I guess like everyone, when you go out to have a good time, you tend not to want to talk about work. But as the council president or a council person, when you go somewhere, people recognize you. They recognize you based on the job you do. And it invariably, you end up talking about work-related issues. And it's like, you know.
There you go again.
There we go again, you know. But, you know, that's part of the deal. And I understand it. And I'll get used to it.
But can you understand why people, when you're in a more high-profile position, people, they do want to know
absolutely.
A little bit about who's running a city or who's the head of city council in your case?
I absolutely understand that. I was on my way from the neighborhood budget meeting that we had the other night, and I stopped by a restaurant on Broad Street to get a chicken cheesesteak, right?
Ooh.
It's had a taste for one, right?
You are a Philly guy.
You know, and I spent the entire time waiting for my sandwich talking to a guy who ultimately ended up asking me to sign an autograph for him, and he just wanted to talk about things, and he was just excited that, in his words, the council president is actually standing here in the store talking to me, you know, and it was a big thing for him, you know, and I just, you know, I accommodated him, you know, and I guess I felt good that I was able to interact with this individual.
Yeah.
So it takes a little getting used to, but, you know, I'll get there.
I think either you will because you have to or because eventually you actually may want to.
Exactly.
You acknowledged both John Street and Anna Verna when you were sworn in city council, and John Street has been such an important part of your life. Did he give you advice about how to be city council president? He had his own style, obviously, and approach.
Actually, not since I've been council president. I guess leading up to it, one, working for him while he was council president and being in leadership in the prior 4 years, you know, I would talk to him about different things relating to government. But I just kind of looked at, you know, the way he ran things and, you know, I actually don't have his style, his leadership style. I have the style that I was born with, you know, a person that, you know, will listen, and he actually listened a lot, but I just have a different...
You listen more.
I just have a different personality, you know, as most people will see and understand. And then actually working with Council President Verna taught me a lot, because I spent the last 4 years in the leadership team as Majority Whip, and seeing her deal and manage personalities, I think, was one of the most significant things that I learned from her, and have significantly more appreciation for the work she's done since I've now become Council President. The ability to deal with 16 other council members and to deal with a broader picture as it related to activities of the city of Philadelphia as opposed to simply the district that I represent. So she taught me quite a bit.
Well, you did an interesting thing. You gave everyone, new members, old members of city council, a committee chairmanship.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's important, particularly in the city of Philadelphia, where a lot of people like to kid and say we don't have real Republicans in the city council of Philadelphia. And to a degree, that's actually true in the broader sense that the Republican members of council views probably are more reflected in the broader sense in terms of what we're trying to do in the city. Every now and then it may come an issue relating to guns or maybe a social issue that they don't necessarily agree with. But it's done in a very civil way. You know, we don't demagogue in terms of on the floor of council. We just simply say, I don't support it, and move on.
Yeah.
And we have some real talent in the minority leadership, in the minority part of council, having Councilman Brian O'Neill, who's a long-term veteran member, long-term leadership member, and has been really good, taught a lot of the younger members how to do certain things as it relates to the district. Having David O, a former prosecutor, a former veteran, actually the only veteran that we have on city council, and having Denny O'Brien, a former Speaker of the House, as members of the Republican Party in council, has been very, very instrumental in us being able to move our agenda.
Do you think Philadelphia is hurt for being largely a one-party town? Obviously, given these chairmanships, you're trying to bring some balance in. I mean, it helps to win in the city if you are a Democrat, but does it hurt the city, do you think, in the long run?
Yeah, I think not having the ability to have two parties, maybe even three, sometimes limits your ability to actually get out there and talk about issues, particularly as it leads up to elections. People need to understand what you're about, not simply winning because you have high name recognition. When you don't have strong opposition in November, that tends to happen.
Yeah.
You win the primary and you're pretty much a shoo-in if you're a Democrat. But, you know, end of the day, I think it's all about what we do for the people and not about the party, which is why I minimize that whole notion that, you know, if you're in the minority, you shouldn't be able to chair a committee. I just poo-poo that. Our tech staff, prior years, it was essentially a tech staff for the Republicans and a tech staff for the Democrats. I immediately got rid of that. It is a tech staff, and they provide support for any member of council who wants resources and some support for some of the legislative initiatives that they're moving for. We're actually in the process of setting up a legislative research bureau. We will have graduate students, and we got a list of them who are chomping at the bit to come down and provide the necessary research and opportunities as it relates to information for council members. And I'm not asking them what party they belong to or even
in just want their skills, right?
I want their skills to come in and provide the support, because unfortunately we're not in a position financially to hire people. So we'll be able to get some real good support from that group.
I do want to talk to issues, and I know that's what you care about most, but I'm also thinking about John Street, who forged a very productive relationship with then-Mayor Ed Rendell. The
Correct.
Two of them together were a pretty formidable force. Do you want that kind of relationship with the current mayor, Michael Nutter? Do you feel like you can get close to something like that?
There are different circumstances. John Street and Ed Rendell had not worked together prior to Ed Rendell becoming the mayor. So I've known Michael for more than 20 years. We worked together, both as staff and as council colleagues. So it's a little different circumstance. The reality is having a relationship between the executive and the legislative branch is always good for a municipality or for a state or for a country. Unfortunately, in the country and in the state, we don't necessarily have that.
No.
So
you're working towards it, or is that something you? I mean, he did oppose your presidency. He supported Marion Tasco.
He very much did.
He did very much. I mean, can you put that behind you and
absolutely
move ahead?
Oh, I mean, the first thing that I did once it became clear that I had the necessary support to be the council president is the person that I thought was the most important for me to reach out to was Marion Tasco. Called her on the phone. We had an agreement. We had breakfast the next day. 2.5 hours we sat down and laughed and talked and had some good food. And she shared a lot of things with me and said she'd be very supportive of moving the agenda of the city council forward. And that was key because a lot of people who had supported her quickly came in. There was some level of skepticism about whether or not I was going to come out with a sledgehammer and banish people to some of the worst offices and not give people key.
You don't seem like the sledgehammer type.
It's not my style. Right. Now, every now and then you may need to threaten it, but the reality is it's just not my style. No, we brought people in. We gave people great committees based on their skill set and their talent and their willingness to chair those committees. And I think you'll see it in our work product as we're moving ahead.
What do you see as the number one issue / problem facing Philadelphia? What's the biggest challenge the city has?
Well, we're no different than most municipalities is that this whole issue as it relates to jobs and the second most and maybe the first, because I think they're connected, is the crime issues in the city of Philadelphia. One, unfortunately, relating to crime, we're somewhat limited in what we can do relating to the numerous gunshots that we experience every day in our city because we just can't get the state to understand the challenges that we have here locally. Jobs, I actually think, we can do some things about that. We can't simply sit back and wait for the national economy to uptick before we do anything. And I like to think that a number of the initiatives that have been put out there that talk about being able to internally stimulate our local economy are some things that we need to move forward to relatively quickly.
Do you see those as connected to poverty? And Philadelphia has, among the top 10 cities in this country, the highest poverty rate. About, 25% of the residents are poor.
And it could actually be higher than that, and particularly in some areas. You can see the unemployment rate could be upwards of 50% in certain targeted areas.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, people have been pretty much put in a position where they have to live in and be able to survive in what's called, quote unquote, an underground economy, because at some point people are going to figure out a way to survive, being legal or illegal. And you create this environment where individuals have some levels of desperation. And I think, subsequently ended up people creating crimes and doing what they had to do to live for themselves and their families. I think that we need to come up with strategies outside of the box. There have been a number of issues talked about, talking about that quote-unquote aforementioned underground economy.
Yes.
The reality is that you have a lot of people out here, and we've been saying this for some time, the young men who cut hair in their basements in an informal way, but that's their ability to live in an informal way. We need to figure out a way to formalize that process. I talk about a gentleman that I met on Cecil B. Moore Avenue, a gentleman who had some challenges in his life. He spent some time away. He came out. He created a business. He went to school, learned how to barber, got a certificate. He now owns a store, a shop, barbershop, and he has 6 people employed. All of those individuals had challenges, and he took a chance on them and brought them into his barbershop.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, talking with Daryl Clark, sworn in earlier this year. He's the president of Philadelphia City Council. Much more after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with Continuously Controlled Damping, or CCD. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
I'm Marty Moscowane. It's the first day of the spring membership campaign, and we want to hear from you. Since you're listening to Radio Times, you know what WHYY means to you. You turn to us for news and for in-depth analysis and discussions. That's what we do every day on Radio Times. So pick up the phone and call 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-9499, or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Simon Rattle returns to the Philadelphia Orchestra to conduct Brahms's Third Symphony, plus the Rhenish Symphony of Brahms's friend and mentor, Robert Schumann, plus music of Brahms's disciple, Anton Weber. Tickets available at philorc.org, by phone at 215-893-1999. This Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Kimmel Center, Simon Rattle conducts Brahms and Schumann with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Supporting WHYY, Fidelity Investments Bucks County Investor Center, located at 1520 Main Street in the Valley Square Shopping Center. Information at 1-800-FIDELITY or fidelity.com. Fidelity Brokerage Services, member NYSE SIPC.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Daryl Clark. He has represented the 5th Council District here in Philadelphia since 1999, and earlier this year on January 2nd was appointed president of the Philadelphia City Council. And we invited him to join us on Radio Times to share some of his thoughts, his vision, his plans for the city of Philadelphia. And we'd be interested in hearing from you as well. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I wasn't going to go through all the neighborhoods that you represent, but it is, I don't know if it's how diverse it is compared to other districts, but it's everything from Center City to Strawberry Mansion, where you grew up, to parts of Kensington, to parts of North Philly. How do you think of your district, your 5th Council District?
I think it's the most diverse in the state. But I think that the fact that it's so diverse has given me an opportunity to have perspectives across the spectrum as it relates to what people are, what people's neighborhoods are, what people think the government should do. Mm-hmm. I think it's uniquely prepared me for this job because I have a sense of you know, the realities of everyone's life in the city of Philadelphia. But at the end of the day, there are still certain underlying themes. People want a safe environment. People want good schools for their children. People want an opportunity for gainful employment, regardless of where you are in my district. So I'm saying that if we can come up with strategies to allow everybody to realize those dreams, then I think we'll be better off. As we talked earlier, we talked about job opportunities, because I do think that's one of the most important aspects of what's going on in the city of Philadelphia. Sure. And I talked about some of the smaller issues. The reality is that we have to come up with creative ideas. One of the challenges that we have in the city, as I talk to businesses, particularly in the Center City portion of my district, you know, their issue is, please reduce my taxes. I want to stay in the city of Philadelphia, but I have a disadvantage as it relates to being here versus Conshohocken or some of the outlying counties.
Is that the business privilege tax?
Business privilege tax.
Some other taxes,
right, particularly
wage
gross receipt tax and
right.
Some of those other taxes that are somewhat onerous on individuals. And the reality is, I want to, but there's a certain level of core services that we have to provide. Those core services are traditionally for a city of a much higher population, 2.5 million, which we used to have. But the reality is, we only have 1.5 million people, and we're basically paying the freight for a city geographically that's built for 2.5 to 3 million people. You still have to maintain a certain level of fire department, because the fire truck has to travel the same distance regardless of how many people live on that block when there's a fire. Same thing with the police. You have to have a sector that's the same size regardless of how many people you have in the city of Philadelphia. Infrastructure, water, sewer, all of those issues, you still have to maintain it. The problem is, we have so few people paying the freight now. Mm. So what I'm saying is, we have to come up with strategies of growing a revenue base simply beyond taxing. One of the proposals that we have out there now is creating development districts. We did an analysis in the city of Philadelphia. We have thousands upon thousands of publicly owned property that's sitting vacant, collecting no revenue, and essentially we're paying to maintain that land across the spectrum, from the Housing Authority to City of Philadelphia Redevelopment, all those alphabet organizations. We have, additionally, thousands and thousands of properties that are tax delinquent. So what we did, we came up with these areas where there's some consistency in both publicly owned and vacant and delinquent real estate taxes properties in those districts. And what we're saying is, put those properties on the market. Mm-hmm. Drop this whole notion that we're going to get market value for every sale. In some cases, we should actually give the property away.
You mean that literally?
Literally.
Just give it away?
Give it away, because it's not producing a dime in revenue. And if there's a tax delinquency, we shouldn't possibly waive the lien if somebody's willing to put this property back on a tax lien. We also think that that we should be in a position to change some of the regulatory requirements that we currently have for development. Maybe we need to give that person a density credit. Maybe we should change some of the parking requirements if that person's willing to build in a challenged area. Maybe we should asked the state of Harrisburg, I'm sorry, the state legislature to give us a 15-year tax abatement in these development districts, therefore creating additional incentives. That's the way you grow your revenue base, by putting all of this vacant land on the tax rolls. City of Philadelphia currently has approximately 30% of the geographical land mass that produces no revenue, be it vacant land, tax delinquent land, institutions, and Fairmount Park. All right. Can't do anything about Fairmount Park. And based on state law, we can't do anything about institutions, but we can do something about vacant land. So I'm saying utilizing internal stimulus, i.e. waiving certain fees and costs associated with purchasing of land, we can put these properties back on the tax rolls.
Well, as you're talking, I was thinking of the terrible fire in Kensington where two firefighters died, a property owned by an outfit up in New York.
Right.
But they were tax delinquent.
Right.
They owe the city taxes.
Right.
Would this fall into what you're talking about here?
Absolutely. That we're looking at those areas, and that is actually in the development district, based on the characteristics that we put to determine where those districts should be. The reality is that we can put that property on sheriff sale, which we have the ability to do, and hopefully somebody will purchase it. But we, the city of Philadelphia, do not want to own that property, because then we'll pick up that liability. But if we were able to tell somebody, you know what, you buy this property on tax sale, if you agree to get in the program, we'll forego how much you paid on it on the tax, on the lien sale. And you know what, we'll give you certain zoning privileges that we would normally do. We'll change the regulations associated with you having to build a development in that particular property. And you know what, we'll give you a 15-year tax abatement. All of a sudden, you have a desirable property because you have the wherewithal and the local incentives to develop that parcel. That's what I think we need to be doing in the city of Philadelphia.
And I can understand how that might make a blighted and vacant piece of property attractive, but I'm thinking of the people that do pay their taxes and haven't had these special abatements and basically followed the rules. And then they see, you know, rules being bent for other people.
Right.
And that sense of it's not fair.
Well, and I agree. I was actually one that proposed changing this whole 10-year tax abatement program, actually, in my last election 4 years ago. And I got smacked across the face by the development community and says, are you crazy? You're going to limit our ability to develop in the city. Couldn't get 9 votes to change it. Didn't want to eliminate it. Wanted to change it. But at the end of the day, you can say that you don't want to create these certain incentives and certain tax provisions for these vacant properties. But guess what? You're going to pay the taxes that vacant property doesn't pay, because we still have to run the city of Philadelphia. We still have to run the rec centers. We still have to pay for police and fire. So if I'm in a position that we can have more revenue coming from other sources, I can subsequently reduce your tax burden, because now you have more people paying into the pie.
That's Daryl Clark. He is the newly sworn in a couple months ago president of Philadelphia City Council. He grew up in the city of Philadelphia. In fact, he grew up in the district that he now represents, the 5th Council District. And we're talking about some of his plans for the city of Philadelphia, some of the challenges that the city faces. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any questions for Philadelphia City Council President Daryl Clark, do give us a call. We have Margarita from North Philly joining us on Radio Times. Margarita, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Hi
there.
Hi, Daryl.
How are you?
This is Margarita Padin speaking. I'm here in your district, and I know you've heard this before because I've spoken before at your city council meetings. I just wanted to know, you know, if you're working on the fact that one of the projects that you have an economic opportunity plan with, which is Temple University Gateway Project, their big 27-story construction project on Broad and Cecil, will be more about neighborhood participation, because not only Latinos and Latinas like myself who live in your district, but African-Americans and other groups are being excluded. There's no neighborhood participation. And like you just mentioned earlier in the program, this is one of the poorest districts in the country. And the few living wage jobs, I mean, there's construction all over Philly, but we're not allowed, city residents are not allowed to participate, and we want to know how you're working on it.
Well, fair enough, Margarita. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Thank
yes,
you.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much for being committed to the city of Philadelphia and my district in particular. That is an issue, which is why we have required any legislation over $250,000 that comes to city council to attach an equal opportunity plan. And essentially, as you know, it requires the developer to lay out a strategy for having inclusion, be it minority participation, disadvantaged participation, and female participation. The reality is it's all about enforcement, and it's all about the ability to have the appropriate workforce in place for that development. One of the things that I've been trying to talk about as it relates to having individuals prepared, because at the end of the day, this is a union town, and in the foreseeable future, it's going to be a union town. So what I've been trying to do, and actually recently as last weekend, talking to the president of the School Reform Commission, and we actually visited Youth Build, which is a school on North Broad Street that prepares people for the construction trades, is to implement that program in the broader school district. Because I think an individual, if they're interested in construction, should be able to walk out of that school in 12th grade and immediately take the apprenticeship test. Because I think that if that opportunity for that individual in the traditional public school were there, the likelihood that that person would pass the test, then be an apprentice on a program, would increase the roles and the ranks within the building trades, we'd have a better opportunity to get on those jobs. Part of our problem is that in the broader trades, we don't have enough individuals in the building trades union. We have a whole lot of folks in the laborers 332, and they do a real good job in local participation, and a decent amount in the carpenters. But once you get beyond that, it's somewhat limited. Electricians are starting to do a good job. They've built a school, a charter school in South Philly to prepare people. But in a much broader scheme, we don't have enough individuals in the union. So I think it's very important for us to do that. Additionally, I think the most important aspect of being able to have full participation is for us to be in a position to have minority individuals or female individuals who actually own general construction companies. Because at the end of the day, the likelihood if you own your company and you're going to hire people from your neighborhood is enhanced. So it's a three-pronged approach. This has been a challenge. I agree. And we have to do better.
Margarita, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Darrell Clark, you had recently an op-ed in the Philadelphia Inquirer saying that Philadelphia needs a second casino. The first one, Sugar House, has been built. The other Foxwoods, basically the investor group pulled out of the Foxwoods. It looks like this issue is before the state legislature, whether Philadelphia or another part of the state gets a casino. What's your argument for a second casino in Philadelphia?
Well, one, when the analysis was done, based on the Gaming Commission, they determined that, one, the city of Philadelphia could support two casinos. Unfortunately, as you said, and fortunately for those that live in South Philly who oppose it,
yes,
Foxwood
they're
did
thrilled.
Not happen. Right.
Yes.
I happen to represent the area where the existing casino is across the street from my district. And early on, there was significant opposition raised because of the potential for traffic issues, crime, prostitution, all the things what people may associate with such an operation. The reality is none of that materialized. I knew that I didn't believe it would because I had done a lot of work over the years on gaming-related activities. And that organization is now spending more than $1 million in the local community organizations. It is providing upwards of 1,000 jobs, decent-paying jobs. My issue as it relates to the second casino is solely economic, not getting into the philosophical issue with respect to gaming. At the end of the day, if people want to gamble, they're going to gamble. They're going to play the lottery. They're going to go to Jersey, or they're going to go to Chester, or they're going to go to Park. So if we have an opportunity to place another 1,500 jobs for citizens of the city of Philadelphia, then I think we need to take that opportunity, because I don't see any other industry in the foreseeable future that's going to be in a position to do that.
And would you like that casino to be at the old Inquirer building on North Broad Street?
I've reviewed the plans. I've talked to some of the leadership in the immediate area. They understand we have some concerns. Knowing what I know about casinos and the operation, I think that any of those concerns can be minimized. Mm. But at the end of the day, there is a process first in Harrisburg to determine if we keep the license. Second, if there's a local process there, I understand there are a number of individuals who are interested. Once that process is determined and followed through, if it ends up being that site selected, then we'll have that local process with the local community.
But is the clock ticking down on the legislature making a decision about who else gets to, in a sense, make a proposal for a casino?
It's ticking relatively quickly. The basis for the op-ed that I put in the paper was one in response to the newspaper who opinion op-ed was opposed to a second casino in the city of Philadelphia. Second was a legislation that was moving through the General Assembly in a committee vote that would have eliminated the city of Philadelphia's second casino. So I just put on the record what I believe to be the case for the city of Philadelphia. So,
what do you feel like you have a relationship with Harrisburg, or that they're key members of the legislature that you can talk to or go to? It is a Republican majority, and we obviously have a Republican governor as well.
Right.
They often look down on Philadelphia as a place where all the state's problems are. What have you been able to do to mitigate some of that?
Well, the first thing that I did was reach out to every member of the General Assembly and leadership, both in the Senate and in the State House. I've met every one of those individuals on a couple of occasions because I understand that the reality is, at the end of the day, they're in the majority and they're going to control the agenda. I've met the governor on a couple of occasions. You will not see me publicly criticizing those individuals on an individual basis, because I understand that you have to have a relationship. Mm-hmm. Do I agree with their policies? In significant parts, absolutely not. But should I continue to have a reasonable and civil relationship? I think for the benefit for the city and city council that I absolutely should. We recently, the city council, had two breakfasts, one with the City of Philadelphia delegation in the Senate and one with the General Assembly, the State House, from the City of Philadelphia delegation over the convention center. We had some really good conversation. We had an information sharing session, and we continue to interact in a reasonable way that will ensure that we continue that relationship. But I think it's important for us to reach beyond the City of Philadelphia's boundaries and have that relationship. So I will continue to do that.
And in fact, I believe it was the last time you were on the show, guns was the issue, and you wanted to be able to limit gun ownership in the city and use that as a way to address the problem of violent crime in the city. That case has essentially gone to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
Or at least the courts in the state.
Right. And that's one of the things that I totally disagree with the Republican Party as it relates to gun laws. We passed gun laws here locally. We were challenged in court. Currently, the status is that the most recent bill that we passed, the ability to criminalize the non-reporting of lost and stolen guns, is in the Supreme Court. The challenge from the National Rifle Association was not heard because they did not have standing. So from my perspective and based on what my legal people tell me, if the City of Philadelphia arrests and prosecute an individual who has not reported a lost or stolen gun that ends up in the commission of a crime, if we do that, then the Supreme Court will hear the case and we will get a ruling. I'm always hopeful that the Supreme Court will rule similar to what they did in Illinois, saying that on a federal case, that the local government should be able to enact reasonable gun laws. I think that's a reasonable gun law.
Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Darrell Clark, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, he's the newly sworn in as of January 2nd, president of Philadelphia City Council. We have a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. If you have any questions or comments for our guest, give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Science Festival supports WHYY and is back April 20th for 10 days. Why does beer have bubbles? What makes cheese stinky? And why are cupcakes so delicious? The answers to these and many other food riddles will be explored at events throughout the city. Participants will learn about molecular gastronomy, why food tastes better when you can smell it, and how to use chemistry to pair wine with different foods. Every Cafe Science event will offer Yards Brewing Company limited edition Philadelphia Science Festival Ale. Tickets and information available at phillascientifestival.org.
Hi, I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, reminding you that you play such an important role here at WHYY. We depend on you for financial support, and you depend on us to bring you news and information that keeps you both informed and entertained. What's that worth to you? You decide and call 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-WHYY or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks so much for doing your part.
Abington Friends School, a Quaker school for preschool through grade 12, supports WHYY. At AFS, teachers are committed to knowing their students, celebrating their talents, and helping them discover their place in the world. AFS is dedicated to preparing students for success in college. A recent grad was selected for a prestigious fellowship at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. Families can experience AFS at an open house on April 24th, an in-service day for most public schools. Info online at abingtonfriends.net.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Daryl Clark knows Philadelphia. He was born in the city, went to school here, attended Philadelphia Community College, worked with John Street, served on City Council, the 5th Council District, since 1999. And earlier this year, he became the president of Philadelphia City Council. We're talking with Daryl Clark about some of the challenges and opportunities that he sees here in the city of Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Barbara from South Philadelphia to join us. And Barbara, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Gee, you touched on something that really hit a nerve earlier when you talked about the property tax and the abatement for residential property. I live in a gentrified area, and as a longtime resident, I've seen my taxes just go through the roof as a result of the neighborhood changing. It's getting better. I love it. It's fantastic. Yet I look out the window at a $500,000 house across the street, and they pay no taxes. So my question simply is what is being done to really equalize the burden of property tax in this city? It's very frustrating, and it drives out long-timers.
Barbara, I appreciate the call. Daryl Clark, go ahead.
Thank you. Actually, before us is this notion of going to actual value in the city of Philadelphia. The neighborhood that you live in is one of the significant concerns that we have in a property, and I'm assuming that you've lived in your property for some time where development around that particular property has been relatively significant, both in terms of scope and in terms of cost of the particular property. Right now, under the current proposal, if you basically do comparables, then if your property is comparable as it relates to size and space and square footage to in the facade of that property, there's a likelihood that your property can actually be categorized as the same as some of those higher cost properties. Therefore, your taxes would be relatively high. We're very concerned about that, which is why we're currently working on a series of measures that will create buffers for individuals. Right now, there's a proposal on the table that if this is enacted, that will give everyone a $15,000 credit towards the assessment. Personally, I'm not necessarily comfortable with that because I don't know why an individual such as myself, as an example, that makes a decent salary, needs to get a $15,000 credit when I can probably pay increased taxes. And the individuals on my block who don't make nearly as much as I do, we get the same credit. So what I'd like for us to do is create some means-based buffers, meaning that based on your income, if you're a lower-income individual, you should get additional support as it relates to your real estate taxes versus an individual who makes, you know, $200,000-$400,000 a year. So that's not what's on the table. We'll be coming out in City Council with two or three measures that are means-based that can give people direct support within their particular individual property.
Barbara, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Another caller from South Philly. This is Alex. And Alex, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Hi. You're on the air, Alex.
Hi. Thanks for coming in, Daryl. Appreciate it. I'm a recent Drexel grad, and my friends and I are all considering moving out of the city, and our biggest concern is the wage tax we have to pay, because our jobs are located in the suburbs, and when we come into the city, we have to pay an extra wage tax on it.
Well, and Alex, you're not alone, and this has been a longstanding issue. Let me see what Daryl Clark has to say. Daryl?
Yeah, I'm equally as concerned about the wage tax as a city of Philadelphia resident. I actually pay a higher wage tax, as you know, in terms of working in the city. at the end of the day, we would love to reduce both your wage tax and both your real estate tax and all the other taxes associated with operating the city of Philadelphia. But as I said earlier, the part of the problem is we have too many non-revenue-producing parcels of land in the city of Philadelphia, and we don't have enough jobs within the city of Philadelphia. So what I like to do is come up with an aggressive approach to ensure that we broaden the revenue base. So that will allow you to, in fact, have some reductions in taxes. We actually had started a wage tax reduction a few years back, started under Ed Rendell, right, and traveled through John Street. And in the first, first year of Mayor Nutter, then we had an economic downturn. So we had to suspend the wage tax reduction program. We have put it in our out years. But the reality is it is done in small increments. And I think that if you you increase the entire revenue base for the city of Philadelphia, be it asset sales, be it putting property back on the tax rolls, it will allow us to more aggressively reduce your wage tax. So I'm as concerned as you are, because I do not want you to leave the city of Philadelphia. Hang in there. Trust me, we're going to do better.
Alex, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me go back to something we were talking about earlier, which is the high rate of poverty. And also, there's a high rate of high school dropout. Now, some students go back, they get a GED, and they're able to at least get that part of their education taken care of. But it seems to me if a company wants to settle in Philadelphia, they want an educated, a skilled workforce.
Right.
What can the city do about that?
Well, we actually talked about that earlier today at a forum. A part of our challenge is in the school district of the city of Philadelphia is our ability to teach individual children for the jobs that are available. Right now, we teach to the test. So it's all about being able to score high on the test, and therefore your rankings go up. And what we've been talking about is coming up with the strategy to look at our growth industries. In this city of Philadelphia, our one growth industry is healthcare.
That's right.
In spite of everything that's happened, our healthcare continues to be aggressively continue new developments in West Philadelphia and University of Pennsylvania. Every time you turn around, there's a new building going up. Biosciences, all of the things associated with that are increasing dramatically, but I don't think that within the broader school district we're adequately teaching people for those particular jobs. So I think that this whole focus on how we educate our young people should change. I met with the SRC chairman. He understands the issue. We're looking at changing some of the curriculum. That young person in that classroom has to believe that there's an opportunity at the end of 12th grade either for a higher education or potentially even a job. So as opposed to teaching to the test, how about teaching to the job? I think that's the most important.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about skills, which is giving, assuming they make it through school and can graduate, that those skills then are translatable into employment.
Employment or higher education.
Or higher education.
I for the first time late last year, I visited Job Corps. And they moved in the old defense industry down in South Philadelphia. And I was stunned. There were 300 individuals in there, majority of them who had actually completed high school, some who didn't. Those individuals were going to that program, and it was predominantly healthcare-related training that they were receiving. They actually had healthcare as individuals. So they had dental.
They actually had the care
actually
themselves.
Actually had the care themselves, right, in the facility. Food, lunch, dinner. I mean, it was remarkable what was going on in there, and people were excited. You could see the young people happy because they knew at the end of the day there was a job opportunity. So I think you have to create that level of optimism in the school district. You may decide, as earlier mentioned, construction trades, you know, some of the other aspects of it. He found, and I talked to some people in Youth Build, they found that when those individuals finished the Youth Build, which is a construction-related school, at the end of their tenure in the 12th grade and youth bill, they actually want to go into higher education because they've gotten in this whole notion of educating themselves. So I just think that we have to get more creative around the school district, and therefore I think that being able to put people to work in the city of Philadelphia to take advantage of the jobs that are currently here is what we need to be doing.
And you feel like you have a good working relationship with the SRC?
I have a good working relationship with the chairman of the SRC, Pedro Ramos, who's a long-term good friend, was here before when the old school district was in place, and he gets it. His ability to get it implemented on the school district level, I think, is important. And then there's one thing that I want to talk about as it relates to the school district is that the reality is, and I've been asked to not talk about this in a very aggressive way, is classrooms. Right now, in a lot of these schools, you have this challenge where you have a small percentage of individuals who come to school every day, and their primary focus during the course of the school day is to disrupt. So you basically have individuals in the class who come to learn who are held hostage because the teacher is spending the bulk of the school day disciplining these young individuals because they're not there to learn.
Right. And so what do you do about that? Well, I mean, these kids need to go to school even if they don't want to be there.
I've said, and I was one of the reasons I took a visit with Mr. Ramos last week, who went to a school, Stetson School, which I'm told 3 years ago Stetson was one of the most notoriously undisciplined schools in the system, and people walking the halls throughout the school day. It was just, you know, tragic what was going on there. And a new team comes in. They run the school, and I was amazed at how disciplined it was in that school. You know, we walked unannounced in the lunchroom, and the children were sitting there with their hands folded waiting to be dismissed. I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. So that environment is now created where people can learn. Now, at the end of the day, it will probably call for some individuals to be taken out of the classroom and put into a different setting. In the Stetson model, they actually had something called Promise Academies where they dealt with those individuals who had challenges within the school itself, be it that model or be it another model where that child has to be put in an environment where they can learn. You know, that has to be done.
Let me get Nick from the Northeast to join us. And, Nick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Nick.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Nick.
Hi, Marty, Councilman.
How are you today? I'm good.
All right. My concerns are, to get off the little beaten path a little bit, something that's been annoying me and I think is a blight on the community here.
Go ahead.
Is that I see on these posts, on the utility polls, usually I know it's the political season, but I have no problem with the politicians. They usually clean up their act afterwards. But I see constantly block after block after block of junk cars removed. They're in yellow. They're in pink. Above that, I'll buy your house in 7 seconds. Big, huge, yellow plastic things posted on these boards, on these utility poles.
You know, Nick, I have to tell you, Darryl Clark is nodding as you're talking. I think he knows exactly what you're talking about. Let me give him a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Now, it's a challenge. I hate them, you know. Actually, interestingly enough, a few years ago, city council actually passed legislation that prohibited elected officials from putting posters up on utility poles because it had gotten out of control. This whole issue pretty much comes down to the ability to enforce it because, you know, we only have so many people in the city of Philadelphia. And during the course of a budget hearing 2 weeks ago when we met with the manager and director's office who has the responsibility, we actually talked about creating what we call community service teams. Right now, under the court system, individuals who have basically violated some minimal laws are given alternative sentencing. So they're given an opportunity to go out and clean vacant lots, remove graffiti, things of that nature, to work off their sentence. And what I suggested to the manager and director that we need to put teams of individuals together, supervised, to go down and take these things off the poles, but also as a follow-up and a part of that process to actually call that number, which they have advertised for junk cars, and cite those individuals. There's a pretty hefty fine associated with putting things on that. So the managing director said he will look into that, and hopefully we'll put that in place so we can get those ugly posters off of those poles across the city of Philadelphia.
And thanks for the call. That's Darryl Clark, our guest here on Radio Times on WHYY. Let me get Mike from Bucks County to join us on Radio Times. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Councilman.
Good morning.
I was wondering, as an elected official, if there's anything that you can do with the entrenched bureaucracy, which is just generally discourteous, unprofessional, and at best indifferent to essentially their customers.
And,
you know, we want to be a world-class city, but this is a terrible image for us.
And Mike, we only have a couple minutes here, but is there a specific department or part of government?
Well, the two departments that I've had recent experience with are licenses and inspection and the Revenue Bureau. Revenue Bureau, if you don't call at crack of dawn, you are on hold for 30, 40 minutes. You frequently get cut off. And then when you do get somebody, you get somebody who's essentially treating you as if you're the enemy.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the call. Let me see what Daryl Clark has to say.
Well, Mike, I agree with you. I think the most important aspect of what we do is providing the appropriate customer service, because you are our customer. I understand that I am a public servant. I work for the public, and I need to treat people in the appropriate way. And I ensure that people that work for me will do that. There are a number of individuals in the broader city employment that are civil service employees. There are certain guidelines with respect to what you can and cannot make them do. I would like to think that if you simply get a note, and people sometimes don't do this as a follow-up, a note to the commissioner in that particular department, in the revenue department as an example. Keith Richards is the revenue commissioner. He is very, very strong on an adequate customer service. He himself sometimes get engaged in a very aggressive way. So if you simply drop a note to the commissioner of that particular department, you can call any office or 311 to find out the direct address. Trust me, if that commissioner gets that note, that particular mm-hmm. employee will be dealt with.
I might tell them that Daryl Clark told you to do this.
Absolutely.
That might help as well. Well, Daryl Clark, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. And he is the new president of Philadelphia City Council, and he represents the 5th Council District here in the city of Philadelphia. Joined us on Radio Times to talk about his vision for the city and obviously to take your calls as well. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.